Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody. Coast to Coast, This Week in America. And through my Christian prism, or at the port rail, Larry Clayton brings a refreshing Christian perspective to these essays that examine the human condition, sharing his thoughts on everything from the flighty and humorous to the serious and the transcendent. His musings and insights, almost all of which were published as op-ed columns in the Sunday edition of the Tuscaloosa News in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, and national newspapers like the LA Times, Christian Science Monitor, Washington Times, and Miami Herald, seek to make sense of life. He laces his stories with wit and wisdom derived from his faith and his experiences. He references the port rail that, when not on duty, he used to hold on to and dream and think a bit while serving on a ship in the U.S. Navy. Larry Clayton is a historian who has published more than a dozen books with major academic and commercial presses, including the Andean Cross, which we discussed on This Week in America. A BA degree from Duke, earning his MA and PhD at Tulane in Latin American history, he's taught about and traveled through most of Latin America over his career, beginning with life as a boy in Lima, Peru, the son of an American dad and a Chilean mother. He's the former chairman of the Department of History at the University of Alabama and also directed the Latin American Studies Program at the university. Now, Professor Emeritus of History, retiring in 2013. A pleasure to welcome back to This Week in America, Larry Clayton, author of Through My Christian Prism or At the Port Rail. Larry, welcome back to the program. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you so much, Rick. I've been around for so long that what one does on a daily or monthly or yearly basis, if you spend 78 years doing it, it adds up and sounds impressive, doesn't it?
Well, it adds up, yes, and it's impressive, yes. I mean, what a career that you've had, and we could spend hours just talking about where you've been, what you've seen, what you've witnessed during that period. And we're talking specifically about the book Through My Christian Prism or At the Port Rail, Larry Clayton, our guest on the program. Book available at Amazon. We'll give you all that as we go through the program. What was the inspiration for this book, Through My Christian Prism?
Basically, Rick, when I write my columns, op-eds for my local newspaper, well, it circulated throughout West Alabama, the Tuscaloosa News. I usually, but not always, put them into a Christian context. I am a Christian, and we could spend the next 25 minutes talking about our faith and how one grows in the faith.
Yes.
But I, like most of us, have grown a little more deeper in understanding and practicing over the years. And I thought, you know, there's so much that goes on in the world today that is ignored by so many people because they ignore the Christian context of our world. This is a Christian country. We have been that way ever since the first English Protestants came over in the 17th century. And while Christianity has diminished a little bit data-wise, you know, I think about 25 or 30% of the population now says when they're asked about their faith, they go, none. And they mean, you know, none, like none. They're not Jewish, they're not Christian, they're not Buddhist, they're not anything. So they're celebrated as the nuns. But I hope many of my readers would agree with this, that there's an answer to all of our problems in the Bible, in
yes.
Scripture. It may not be a specific answer. You're not going to find something in there about global warming or how to avoid a nuclear exchange that destroys the world, but you're going to find the principles expressed in there, which if read and understood and applied, will take us into the future in a fashion that emphasizes, and I'll stop here, faith, love, hope, and all of the great things that Jesus did for us in the world. And secondly, one of my favorite Christian authors, and he's really not known as a Christian author, is C.S. Lewis, who wrote, among other things, you know, I'm not going to start quoting all of C.S. Lewis's books, but in one of his books called The Weight of Glory, he wrote, I believe in Christianity as I believe that the sun has risen, not only because I see it, but because by it I see everything else. And I use that as a beginning to my little book. And so that's why I compiled 25 or 30 essays into a book, because I thought that not simply Christians but others would share. And I do it in a way that I hopefully is kind of light. I'm not a George Will, you know. I'm an academic, and I can use the long words if I have to, but I don't, because I want to reach everybody, as many people as read it as possible, and say, hey, yeah, you know what? Maybe in this particular instance, my faith has an answer. You know, patience. We all are impatient. You know, if somebody cuts me off in traffic, Rick, and I don't give them one of my digits from my hand, you know, but yes. I'm not thinking of Christian theology at that particular moment. It's not for everything, but it's for all the big things. And so that's my long answer to a very good short question.
Well, it's a great answer, because it does put things in a different perspective. And I think one of the reasons these essays, the book, and your columns have resonated so well for so long with people literally all across the country, with various newspapers that carry the essays. What does this book say about life in these United States? What overview do you have?
Yeah, you know, the first chapter is called Life in These United States. And it's got about six or seven articles in it, and as I look them over, I see in the titles the answers to your question. Like one piece is called Something for Nothing. Is anything worthwhile that you don't have to either put your faith in God, and or work for it, or do both? No, you know, nothing is free. You know, life is free. But the things that are worthwhile in our world, and I'm talking about not simply the Christian world, but all of the world that we're in, is determined by how much interest you have and how much you want to invest in your time and your money and your work in it. Something for nothing. I got another one called Casts in America. Do we have castes in America? C-A-S-T-E-S. Yeah, sure we do. We're all different. There are people who are born to money and people who are born to, in poverty. But we have a way in which you can transition from one to the other. And I've seen and read about people who go from having a lot to nothing. And so many people who have had nothing or came over as immigrants and worked their way up through education and determination and applying themselves. So how about compassion? Compassion, or how we relate to people. You know, part of life in the United States is having compassion for people. That's biblical. If you look at the Old Testament, one of the things that the Hebrews were taught by their laws and by their prophets was to have compassion. And they usually use the widows and the orphans and others. But they're talking about everybody who doesn't have what you have. How does that work? How do I do that? Why should I do that? And for those of us that have learned how to be compassionate, it is so rewarding, Rick. You know, you're not going to be remembered or recalled or put in the newspaper or be on, you know, breaking news for doing it. But God's going to take care of you if you are taking care of his people. And another chapter here is listening to the latest ideas. And you have to read it, really. You can buy the book, obviously.
And we hope they do.
Because the latest ideas aren't always the best ideas. But we have to be constantly renewing our civilization and our culture. And the last one in this life in these United States, and I'd forgotten I had written this, and I loved rereading it just now. Why Mexicans aren't coming to the United States?
Yeah, interesting.
You know, why Mexicans aren't coming to the United States? A lot of Mexicans aren't coming to the United States. We're not even over the whole country of Mexico doesn't want to come to the United States. There are many people in the world who want to come to the United States, and that's another whole subject. Why do people want to come here? Do they want to go to Russia? Do they want to go to China? Do they want to go to Uganda? Do they want to go to Cuba? No, they don't want to go to any of those places. They want to come here. Why is that? Is it because we're so bad? We're so racist? You know, we have become, you know, so kind of wrapped up in ourselves and looking at ourselves and looking at our backgrounds and looking at our race and looking at what we have and don't have, that we've forgotten that We also have liberty, and we have the ability to do what we'd like to do as individuals. We have freedom. We aren't thrown in jail like the Cuban, poor Cubans right now, who are spontaneously rising up against the communist regime. And so why do people want to come here is one reason. And then I was out in Mexico, and I stayed with a Mexican family in Veracruz doing some research. They don't want to all come to the United States. They're happy in Mexico. And I think that's another version of immigration. Not everybody wants to leave and come here, but the ones that do are drawn by something very special in this country. And so what I wanted to do in that particular essay was just contrast it. Well, not everybody wants to come here. Some Mexicans are happy. Peruvians are happy. Englishmen are happy where they are, for the most part. And what are the virtues in those societies that make them happy? What is the nature of Mexico and Peru and England and maybe Egypt, you know, that makes people not really want to leave there? And I think exploring those cultures and those civilizations and those peoples also helps tell us something about ourselves.
You know, it really does. And your essays, once you finish, you're sort of there looking at the page, looking at the paper, thinking. It gets all of us thinking. And I'm sure that's part of the reason you do this, is to get this all in a state where we want to go back and reflect on what you just said. And you bring up an interesting point of view, and you do it from such a background of travel where you've met these people, these countries that you're talking about. Something that I'm interested, you write about the business of America. Let's talk a little bit about that in your essays. It's something that's come under a great deal of scrutiny over the last couple of years, as the gap widens between those at the top and those that work for the people at the top. What are some of your thoughts business here in America?
Well, you know, there's a president back in the 1920s who said the business of America is business. And there were French travelers to this country in the early 19th century, not just Alex de Tocqueville, but others, who came to this country and observed that these people are making democracy work. And let me tell you something else about them. They love to make money, you know.
Yes.
And not in a negative sense, you know, not in, oh, well, capitalism, you know, has destroyed the middle class, and it has enriched a very few, and we need to overthrow that and establish equality with everybody, socialism or communism, in which the state determines everything. But there's something about the ability to work in something that you like to do. I once heard an adage. It says, if you have a job that you like, it's not a job.
It's exactly.
Not,
yes.
Well, I have to go to work, you know. I have to go and pick up the garbage today. You know, somebody's got to do that. It's a good end to get into the society of running a city or a town. And he says, but if you have that, you're lucky. And we have the ability in this country to give everybody a chance to do that. Now, they have to be encouraged, as kids do. They have to be taught. They have to be corrected. They have to be given the right principles. They're not all Christian principles. Liberty is not particularly a Christian principle, but liberty is built into the Constitution. And that's what makes this country exceptional. There's a theory in history, sorry, speaking to a historian, which says this has been an exceptional country over the years. It's not Rome. It's not the old English Empire. It's not the Soviet Union. And it's not communist China. It is America, and it is special. And then others, you know, deny and say, no, that's just covering up the racial problems. I mean, we had a civil war, didn't we? 800,000 people were killed. Yes, they were. But you know what? We got rid of slavery.
Yes.
And that was an evil. It didn't match up to the greatest dictum that came out of the age of our founding fathers, written by Thomas Jefferson. And you and I and everybody listening knows very well, all men are created equal. But the guy who wrote that had slaves. And so people go, Jefferson was a hypocrite. No, he wasn't a hypocrite. He was writing at the time in which slavery still existed across the Western world. But he was expressing, and I'll stop here, he was expressing goals, he was expressing principles that we consider foundational, that provide for an individual's right to determine his or her life, you know, according to certain rules, or, you know, We know that murdering people is not right. Exploiting people is not right. Lying people is not right. You can go to You can go to the book of Psalms, I think Psalm 6, no, not in Proverbs 6, Psalms, I think it's Proverbs 6, and find the six great seven sins, or you can go back to the Ten Commandments and find 10 sins. We know not what to do, or not, you know, the things we don't should, and those keep us within the boundaries of civil Christian society. But we also are free to determine what we want to be. Our kid, I have a son who's a pilot, right? He wanted to fly. He didn't want to go to college, Rick. You know, he wanted to fly. And I used to, I had a little plane. I guess I'm still a pilot, though. I'm not current and not flying. And he loved it. And now he's flying charter jets out of Tampa and St. Petersburg. And he loves their work. I have another daughter, a stepdaughter. She wanted to be a doctor all her life. A real doctor, as we say in the trade, an MD, you know, as opposed to me, a PhD. And she was determined to do that. And she did it. And now she's a very successful practice, has a practice in plastic surgery in Alpharetta, Georgia. I have another daughter. She didn't have a real strong business sense that I know of, but she had a determination to work and to do well in what she does. And now she's a pizza executive out in the West Coast. She lives in Portland. And she loves family. She's got two lovely boys and her husband, and she just are raising them, and they're doing the right things. They're teaching them. But I get under her skin sometimes when we talk. I go, well, Stephanie, you've been burning down the city at all today, you know? You're beating up cops.
Yeah, I'm sure that sparks an interesting conversation. Yeah, I'm sure that sparks an interesting conversation. It's just
the point is we have the freedom to do this. Now, we don't have
exactly.
to.
Exactly, yes.
You can go be a bum if you want to, right?
Yep.
You can be a drug addict and die from it, you know. But that's what makes us distinct from other cultures and other civilizations. And it's something that we want to preserve. And I think if you read these pieces in this little book, I have a whole section on truth. Well, I have one section on truth. I have a section on humor. You know, funny things happen to us. And you need to enjoy those funny things sometimes and remember them because it gives your life a certain joy. We're not all just all ants working here 10 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's not us. We like to work and we like to enjoy the fruit of our work, but we also like to take vacations. We like humorous situations. We took an RV trip once. We rented an RV, and I'll tell you what, read that little essay. I read it back and I laugh and I'm going, what am I laughing at? I was living it, you know.
You lived it.
You know, something fell off, you know, or it wouldn't start or those kind of things. So I like living in this country.
Well,
I think for somebody like me who has had the opportunity to live elsewhere and travel elsewhere, it makes your own country. And Mark Twain said this. He said, you know, travel will break down prejudice and small town and small thinking, because once you get out and see the world, you understand how good your world is.
Yeah, I'm sure every time you come home, you're appreciative from all of the travels that you've done and come back to the U.S. And you write from that perspective. The book is Through My Christian Prism or At the Port Rail by Larry Clayton. Book available at Amazon, all of the usual places. You can link on by going to our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Larry back with us on the program. A few minutes left in the program, going by way too quickly, but you keep talking about history. And you write about history. Why is history as important as it is to all of us? And is it important? I'll ask you, how important is history? I'm making an assumption there maybe I shouldn't be making. How important is history? Because some people overlook it.
Yeah. History is like, let me put it in this fashion. If you don't know your history, it's like a man or a woman, or a child and whatever, you know, whose memory has been erased or has been altered or changed not to reflect what indeed they have gone through. And there's several old adages in history, you know. History doesn't repeat itself. It's historians who repeat themselves. But in fact, if you don't know your history, good and bad, you're apt not to understand what's happening to you today and have the advantage of knowing what has happened in the past has led to a certain ends, you know, certain results. And do you want those replicated today or not? History is knowing that you sacrificed, that your parents and your grandparents and your cousins and your friends all went to war, for example, in 1917, let's take the First World War, to defend the world from aggression and defend America's freedom. And we have done this over the years. So history is your memory. Okay, let's just leave it at that. History is your memory. If you lose your memory, you don't know who you are. You know, and it's like a country having a national dementia. I'm not using dementia to say anything about it because it's a disease. But if you don't have your memory, you don't know who you are. You don't know where you are.
How frustrating!
You don't know who's good and who's bad.
How frustrating is it as a historian when you see history repeat itself, when we're back making some of the same mistakes that you thought maybe 10 years ago we learned from, and we're going down that path again? How frustrating is that? It's like, I want to send you a history book and look and see what happened the last time you did this.
Yeah, I was just reading something about Afghanistan today.
Well, in fact, that's what I was thinking of. If you look at history, nobody's ever come out of there a victor.
I'm not going to say I could have told you so. But nobody who has invaded Afghanistan has changed Afghanistan in the last 3,000 years.
Yes.
Beginning with Alexander the Great. And, you know, your reader's going to go, who's Alexander the Great? You know, is he a senator from Iowa or somebody? No, you know, he was an emperor who conquered Afghanistan, went all the way to India, left Afghanistan, and Afghanistan didn't change. And Afghan has been invaded over the years by different civilizations, by the Islamic civilizations, and by the Persians, by the Ottoman Turks, and the latest ones were the Soviet Union in the late 1970s and early 80s. They invaded Afghanistan, and we through the CIA just kind of subverted them, and they couldn't change Afghanistan. And now us, Rick, it's been what, 20 years since we've been there, and we haven't changed anything, you know. And I hate this. It just breaks my heart to see all those people who have been wounded. And in such horrible fashions, you know, and the appeals to help take care of them, it makes me want to, and I do try and help, but for what? When we fought the Civil War brought slavery to an end. That was a positive, you know. Well, 800,000 people died, and it wasn't just simply slavery; it was states' rights. And there's a whole big debate going on right now. But basically, we ended an evil.
Yes.
You know, and the answer can be, well, if you look in history. There were Jim Crow laws, there was segregation, it continued to last for another 100 years. I said, yeah, but in the 1960s, we got rid of that. You know, we put all those laws down. We said, no, you can't have segregated schools, blah, 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 blah. And so, and we changed that. But that's a lesson right there. Now, were African-Americans totally integrated into American society? Yes and no. You know, there's differences between people. Like, I liken the differences between people like belly buttons. All right, this is my belly button philosophy. We all have belly buttons, right?
Yes.
Everybody has a belly button. They're all a little different, aren't they?
Yep.
But they all play the same role, right? your belly button. And I should probably do an essay on that, the belly button history. But anyhow, but we're all a little different, you know? Have those differences affected the way we behave toward blacks, towards whites, towards Hispanics, towards Chicanos, Asian Americans? Yes, it has. But we're constantly improving, constantly diminishing those. But the history tells you. But you don't get something for nothing. You don't say to people, we'll take care of everything, like the government. And I'm not talking as a politician here, a Democrat or a Republican, but as somebody who has seen socialism and communism in different parts of the world, the state is not the final determining factor in how an individual lives. It's that individual. Now, the state has a role to play in defense. I was in the Navy. I don't know if you're in the service, but the service exists for a reality to protect your country.
Yes.
The state builds the roads and the highways and the canals, and it provides education in many ways. And the state has a role to play. But you can look at the history of how something has been exaggerated, like the the super control of a country through the state, like in the old Soviet Union, like in Cuba today. Why are the Cubans rising up? And they're taking their life in their hands by rising up and going out in the streets, because the Cuban state, controlled by the military, is tough, and they don't want to give it up. And my thinking is, we need to do something other than talk. But that's something else.
Well, yeah, and it's so interesting to hear a historian put everything in perspective, and you'll have the benefit of doing that when you read Larry's book, Through My Christian Prism or At the Port Rail, Refreshing Christian Perspective. These essays most appeared in the local newspaper, Tuscaloosa paper, and other papers all around the country. It's been a thought-provoking conversation, and you'll find all of that as you read Larry's op-eds, as you read the essays, books. You'll find all the others by available on Amazon. Would you look for Larry's book, Through My Christian Prism or At the Port Rail? Larry, I don't know where the time has gone today. There's so many interesting topics that we could get into. Each topic you brought up could be a separate program to talk about that and get it from your unique perspective. Thank you for being back with us on the program. Look forward to doing it again. So much more to talk about. Thank you for spending some time with us.
Thank you so much, Rick. I enjoyed talking, and sorry for babbling on, but a lot of these things are important, and I know friends and relatives and people I don't know find them important as well, and we need to be reminded of these things and edified and lifted up about how much we have in this country and how much fun it is and how rewarding it can be.
Well, that's why what you do is so important, because after we finish all of the topics we talked about on the program, when you read the different essays in Through My Christian Prism, or you read one of Larry's op-eds or one of his other books, it will get you thinking and putting things in the proper perspective. It's been a pleasure, Larry. Thank you again for joining us on the program. Hopefully we can do it soon and pick up on the conversation. It's been a pleasure. And the book is available at Amazon, the usual places, Through My Christian Prism or At the Port Rail. Larry Clayton is the author and our guest on the program. Information on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. Back on today's program after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.